history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there really are some stories out there that need to be told, and we want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We really need to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And as we take that journey, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and so often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today, I'm in a city I'm sure you've heard of, Las Vegas, Nevada, home for the last quarter century to Bob Andre, 92 years old, a U.S. Marine Corps veteran of World War II, which we're going to hear about, and some of the decorations that he earned in those 2 years in the Pacific. But let's start before that, Bob. You grow up in the East Bay in California, the Richmond-Oakland area, which before World War II, what was that like? Probably a little different from today.
Very quiet, very nice. Enjoyed very much living there because of the environment. As far as entertainment, as kids, we always had something to do. Lots of sports, school sports, lots of activity that way, mm-hmm. Basketball, baseball. But then it turned kind of sad for me at the time because I was only 15, I believe, when my mother passed away. And my stepdad was young enough. He joined the Navy instead of the Army. He didn't want to be drafted there, so that left my older brother and I on our own. We have no place to go. So I quit school because I had to make money to live. Then I traveled all around the United States on my own. And a friend of mine and I, we were just kids. And then I turned 16, and I was a Gandhi dancer in Montana. That's working on the railroad, quite young, working with a jackhammer. And holding the jackhammer, I held it too tight, and my hands swelled up. Then I'm heading home back to California, and I wrecked my car, typical 15-year-old boy, and it's still in Yellowstone, I guess. Then from there, I got back to Oakland riding the rods, and riding the rods was interesting. When I'd come to a bridge or a tunnel, they had Army stationed there, and they'd shoot at us with shotguns because we're not supposed to be doing that.
Yeah, so some of the people listening, they weren't around at this time, and they're trying to figure out, what is he talking about? So you're saying you would hop on these trains even though you didn't have a ticket, and you're just...
Freight trains.
Yeah, not passenger trains. So where are you standing or sitting or holding on?
Well, a particular car I jumped on had flat steel for the Moore Shipyard to build ships. And that went riding in those, which is government material, and that's where all the Army was stationed, at the entrance of a tunnel and the exit, and the same way with bridges. And they would shoot at us. I didn't know that. First time I was waving to them until they shot at us. And I figured that they're not going to be very friendly. So we ended up, it took us about 5 days to get back to California. The train was so slow, it was really loaded. Then once I got home, I went to work at the Moore Shipyard. And I worked there for a short time. And then when I was 16, I decided I wanted to join the Marines. I saw a movie, Wake Island or something. And at 15 and 16, you're kind of get impressed. So I went to the Marine recruiter and I said, I want to join the Marines. How old are you? I said, 17. And it didn't work too good. I had to have a guardian sign for me. I had no guardian, no mother, no father. So the recruiter said, that's no problem. All we do is take you to a judge, and he'll appoint a guardian for you for the day. Mm-hmm. And he'll sign you in the Marine Corps, which we did. I was still 16, but I didn't tell them that.
And you say that all matter-of-factly, but I'm sure there's some parents out there that are thinking, boy, if my teenager did all these things, riding a freight train, getting shot at by the Army, making it back here, working in the shipyard, signing up for the Marines, all as a 16-year-old, did any of that faze you, or was that just a big adventure for you?
No, it's necessary. I had to make a living. I had to make money to eat. And as far as being shot at, I didn't think that was very nice. So I go join the Marine, and it turns out they shoot at me too. Uh-huh. That wasn't very nice either.
I guess I need to back up too, because December 7th, 1941, seems like everybody remembers something about Pearl Harbor Day. Do you remember where you were or how you found out what happened out there?
Yeah, we heard it on the radio. I didn't know where Pearl Harbor was. I was lucky to find my school. But anyway, that was on December 7th. When I signed up, it was in April of 43.
So you weren't old enough yet, Pearl Harbor Day, a couple years later. You still weren't old enough, but you convinced them you were. You get into the Marine Corps. Did you have any idea what you were in for?
Not really. As you said, a little adventure, but I got room and board. That's really what I was looking at. I had to have some place to eat, some place to sleep, and they provided all of that. They also provided me a little tank to play with. And after I learned how to drive that thing, we were bored sitting around San Diego, Jack's Farm. They asked for volunteers to go into the infantry, and we were taught not to volunteer, so I volunteered, and I ended up in the infantry as a BAR man, Browning Automatic Rifle. Went overseas, finally, a short time later, and we ended up in New Zealand. Took us 31 days to get there.
Had you ever been on a ship before?
No, and I got sick immediately. Every time I turned around, I was sick. Uh-huh. 15 days sick.
Were you wondering what you got yourself into?
No, I was just waiting for what's going to happen the next day.
So you get to New Zealand, and then they're staging you guys and preparing you for an invasion, or what?
Yes. When we landed, we were reserve Marines. The first 30 went A Company. The second 30 went to B Company. The third 30 went to C Company. And there was one guy left over. And they said, well, what are we going to do with him? That was myself. And they said, send him to Dog Company. So I walked over to Dog Company and told the top sergeant that I was assigned to them. He said, you been in a galley yet? I says, no. He says, go over to mess hall. Spend 30 days there, and we'll figure out what to do with you. And after 30 days of wonderful galley duty, I went back, and they said, well, you're in the machine gun company now. And I was the seventh one in the machine gun squad. There's eight. With that, after we trained with the machine gun, my BAR experience was forgotten. That was for riflemen. So then after our training, we went to invade Tarawa.
And what kind of machine gun was that?
30 caliber. I had the light and the heavy. The heavy is a water cool. The light is a small barrel.
And what was your job in that squad? You're actually operating, firing the weapon or no?
Well, I was trained. We were all trained in it. Yeah. But I was assigned to 7th man, so I carried two boxes of ammunition, which they used up fast.
And when you're carrying ammunition, can you defend yourself?
Well, we carried M1 rifles, first of all, then the carbine. They gave us carbines with light ears. Yes, we could defend ourselves because when we stopped, we were staggered behind a gunner, number one, number two gunner. And I was back at the end, and as they used the ammo, we just moved up, and they took it. That was on Tarawa.
Well, and I've heard it pronounced every other way.
I've been corrected a number of times.
Well, and no matter how you pronounce it, it's a battle that a lot of people don't know a whole lot about, but it's a battle that was extremely bloody for a very tiny amount of land. Had you any idea where it was or how big it was or where you were going?
Not at the time, no.
Yeah.
We had no idea until we were ready to go in. And I was lucky I didn't go in the first wave. And so that they're the ones who, the brains-to-be, miscalculated the tide. And they went in. It was not shallow, low tide. It was high tide. And then they were, when they jumped off the Amtraks or whatever we had, going in, they were caught right in front of the machine because the machine guns were about 8 feet in a wall that we didn't have much land to land on, only about 8 feet. Then there was a wall, and the machine guns were right there going into it.
So if you had been in the first wave, you probably wouldn't be sitting here talking to me.
Yeah, they got the bulk of it, and the ones that were wounded end up dying during the night. All night long, they're calling for help, help, but nobody could get to them. And slowly you hear the help, 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 just fade away because the Japs were out on the pier, which was their toilet. And how they determined how many Japs were on the island, they took an aerial view of the toilets, figured how many used the toilets, and that's how many Japs they figured was on the island, how they calculated it. So the next morning, over the wall, and then we were just going from coconut tree to coconut tree, or body to body, whatever was any protection, you know.
Well, and that was my question when you got there. And here you're, you're 17 years old?
Yes, yeah.
17-year-old, never been in combat before. What did you see and hear and experience when you first got on that island?
Well, the thing we were doing is trying to get there, because we were told to get there. And as far as thinking, I wasn't thinking at all. I was just doing what I was told.
What did you see?
Well, just bodies all over the place, and we would stay as low as possible to keep from getting hit.
And were they able to get you all the way to shore, or were you guys hung up on the reef too and you had to wade in?
No, we went in rubber boats. Okay. Yeah. So we were able to get in. We got a lot of bullets in the rubber boats, but they were with so many compartments that it didn't sink. Yeah.
So you're 17 years old. You're coming ashore with dead American bodies all over the place and bullets flying your way. Yeah. Were you scared?
I didn't have time to think about that. I really didn't. And plus, being 17 and young, you didn't know what the hell was going on.
Something tells me that must have been a pretty long day for you.
Well, it sure was. It started at dark, early in the morning, aboard the ship, mm-hmm. loading up, going over the cargo nets on the ship. No, it was a long day, but when you don't get hurt, you don't think much of it.
But I'm sure some stuff came pretty close to you.
Oh, yeah, all around us. Yeah, sure. They're bouncing off everything. Yeah. You know, you don't think anything of it. I didn't. I was just doing what I was told, is getting from point A to point B without getting shot.
So you spent that whole time following these machine guns and keeping the ammunition supply going?
Staying in my position, stay where I belong, yeah.
How'd you sleep that first night?
I didn't, because they put me out on a point. This a lot of people don't know about, but they called me and he said, go out about 10, 20 feet out there. Well, turns out when I went out about 10 or 20 feet, there were Japs there. I can hear them talking. and then he finally realized what they had done. They called me back. I crawled out and I crawled back. Yeah, because you can hear them jabbering over there. Yeah.
How close do you think you were to him?
Here to her.
10 feet.
Yeah, easy. Uh-huh. Easy. But I've been closer.
Well, you're teasing us now. I'm sure there's more to come in this story here.
That's another battle.
Well, we'll get to it, I'm sure, as long as you're willing. So how long were you there? And I say an island, really. This is an atoll, a few different strips of land kind of in a collection.
That was on Bito, was the name of the island itself. That's where all the fighting took place. Now, some of the Japs left to the other islands, and they're a horseshoe shape. After 78 hours or so, then we start cleaning up the bodies of our boys. Then they told us we had to load up on the Amtraks. We were going to the other islands because the ones that are left are on the other islands running away, going around. And we went from island to island, which was we waded across. They're low tide, you can wade across from island to island. But we went about, six or seven islands, and then they replaced us. They brought other outfit in to relieve us, and we went back to the ship. And from there, we went back to Hawaii.
Well, and you say that, you know, you guys had to clean up the dead American bodies. That had to be hard, especially for a 17-year-old. How do you handle something like that?
Well, 17, you really don't know much about life. So, again, I was told to, I went with a minister, preacher, a priest or something, to go around. He would take their rings and watch off and search your pockets, and then take them back to the tent at nighttime, and he'd go through them and clean out anything that shouldn't be in the wallet and stuff like that. Then at that time, we would have a stretcher or a litter or whatever, and we'd load the body on there and take it to the airstrip. And let the airstrip, we had 7 or 8 or 10 of them, something like that. The first one was a Navajo Indian. He was behind a stump of a coconut tree, and he was shot right through the radio and right through the head. Yeah.
Did you lose any of your friends there?
Oh, yeah. Egghead Epperson, he was killed. Matter of fact, he was awarded the Medal of Honor. He was from our squad, yeah.
What had he done that they gave him that award posthumously?
Well, he was in foxhole, and Japs were throwing hand grenades at him. He pulled them underneath him. Even though their hand grenades weren't very powerful, but they did the job. They killed him.
So he sacrificed his own life to save others?
Yeah, two other guys in a hole with him.
Well, I'm sure a lot of people have referred to your actions in World War II as heroic, and we're going to hear more about what you did. But just hearing you tell me that story about Epperson, sounds like he's someone who you might have seen as a hero.
Well, absolutely. He had a head shaped like an egg, and we all nicknamed him Egghead. I was Prune Picker because I was California. And they named a ship after him, a couple of them. Had it for so many years, and they gave it to some foreign country and sold it, and they built another one, named it after him, yeah. But that was about the end of that battle. That didn't last that long.
Yeah, it was quick, but it was devastating. It was bloody. It was deadly.
Oh, yeah. You ask about sleeping. I don't know if anybody else slept. I sure as hell didn't. Whatever I got was lucky.
Well, and I hear you talk about other guys who died there. And I have to wonder if there were moments in a foxhole or behind a stump or even while you're carrying a body on a litter where you maybe wondered, am I next? How long am I going to last out here?
No, you just try to... I really did. I don't remember thinking that way. I'm sure I was afraid or scared, but as far as thinking about it, I never really thought about it. Again, I go back to my age. Just don't think about it. I didn't. I wasn't any kind of hero or anything like that. I just, nothing registered.
It's time for our first break, but there's more to come with Marine Corps veteran Bob Andre of Las Vegas, Nevada. What did he do on Saipan that earned him the Silver Star? We'll hear it in his words and in the words of the military at the time. Take a look at what Bob looked like then and what he looks like now at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll be right back after this.
Remember when the bank gave you free checking and savings accounts, even making money for you when you kept your dollars there? Paul Leffler here to say I've recaptured those days, and you can too with EECU. It's not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that just keeps growing and growing. The newest branch is in Tulare, and nearly a quarter million and EECU members represent 10 different California counties. As little as $250 in a savings account earns you dividends. And access is so easy. 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And I haven't even told you what I love most about EECU, the credit union's support of causes up and down our area, like Central Valley Honor Flight. Nearly 1,000 veterans have gotten to see their memorials for free because of the leadership and financial support of EECU. Ready to join the team yet? Call 1-800-538-3328.